Previously, on Familial.
I just don't understand why they don't just go there and figure out what happened, you know?
I was there. I saw what happened. No one's asking me anything. Where do we go from here? How do we get there? This is a global telling. Prepaid call from...
NG, wow!
A child in timeout at... Roush household.
From Sioux Falls, South Dakotan Life and WMRF Sioux Falls, it's Familial. One story about the Miles Roush family, told minute by minute. I'm Holly Roush. For the last year, I've spent every working day trying to figure out where a one-year-old was for 30 seconds after supper one day in 2013. Or, if you want to get technical about it, and apparently I do, where a one-year and three-month-old was for 30 seconds after supper one day in 2013. I've learned a lot about time this past year. Like, it's really hard to account for your time in a detailed way, I mean. How'd you get to daycare last Wednesday, for instance? What did you eat for breakfast? Where are your gloves? Are they at daycare? Are you sure? The entire day, name every person you talk to. It's hard. Now, imagine that time is such an abstract human construct as to defy all possible analogies constructible by your tiny mind. That's the situation in the story I'm working on. Just on a lark, I found some other tiny minds and asked them about their time.
So, tell me about what you were doing six Fridays ago.
Six Fridays ago?
I don't remember yesterday.
Shoot, man.
I mean, you can look at your calendars.
I wasn't chilling with Trevor. I know that.
Probably working.
Same. I work Friday nights. I was at school. That's one thing.
Yeah.
You know, did anything like special go on or?
Nope.
No.
What'd you do six Fridays ago?
I went trick-or-treating with my kids.
That was Halloween. Oh,
I dressed up as a pirate.
I worked.
And I went trick-or-treating.
So I was right.
Six Fridays ago, all right.
You can, like, look up
what it is. Can I answer?
Sure, you can answer again.
Okay. I dressed up as a pirate. And I ate Taco Bell. That's what I did.
Is that Halloween?
Here's the case I've been working on. Last Christmas 2013, a small ornament went missing from the Roush family Christmas tree. It was a customized bauble with my husband's picture on it and the word Niles beneath it. They had misspelled his actual name, Miles, but gave us the ornament at a discount. I had placed it on the tree around Thanksgiving. By Christmas, the ornament was missing. That's when I knew something was up, when I didn't see the ornament on the tree where I'd put it. About a month later, on January 30th, the ornament was found in the corner of the living room, smashed to pieces. My husband, who said he was organizing the board game box in that corner, discovered it there. A few weeks after that, our two-year-old, a little girl named Ainsley Roush, was put in timeout for the crime. She's been in timeout ever since. The crime, the passion, the intrigue, these are what launched me on this year-long, obsession is maybe too strong a word, let's say f***ing obsession with this case. It's not like I've had a boring year. I'm in my third year of teaching at New Tech High School. We just bought a fridge, yet for as much as I've tried to concentrate on the things most important to me, the details of Ainsley's crime keep floating around in my subconscious like an ominous buoy. The case against Ainsley goes like this. She's 2 years old and sometimes just likes to watch the world burn. For physical evidences, there wasn't much. Her greasy fingerprints are all over the living room. She was seen there before and after the incident occurred, but so were two other people. Instead, what parents had on Ainsley was 1 4-year-old's story from a guy named Ian, her brother. He's the third person you need to remember in this story, besides Ainsley and Miles. And me, too. So 4 people. Just go ahead and try to remember all the people in the story, because there aren't that many, and it makes the story that much easier to follow. The story Ian told parents had problems because it kept changing from telling to telling. Here's a tape recording of Ian's first interview with parents.
This is a taped interview with Ian Gregory Rausch, who's a silly goofball.
The parents recorded 2 interviews with Ian. I'm going to play the second one because the first one is mostly just Miles saying, is it on?
Yeah.
Does the light mean it's on or not on? Just a warning that the tape is a little upsetting to hear in parts.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us what you know about the Christmas ornament and how it got broken?
What Christmas ornament?
Don't pretend you don't know about the Christmas ornament.
I'm pretending.
So you do know about the Christmas ornament?
Nope.
You don't
I'm not pretending.
You're not pretending, but you are pretending?
I'm not pretending.
Which one is it? Are you pretending or are you not pretending?
Not pretending.
If you were pretending, would you know about an ornament?
Yeah.
It goes on like this for a while. It seems shady, right?
Ivory?
The way the details keep shifting, it's like the truth is an ominous buoy bobbing in ominous waters. In Ian's story, they were driving around on these little cars they got for Ainsley's birthday, pretending to talk on their Spider-Man cell phones. At one point, Ainsley says, I'm going to break that ornament, leaves her car and phone next to Ian, and approaches the tree.
Ainsley said, the ornament is broken. Come get me. I'm an S-spy. She chased me to the curb. Are you ready for this? I said, am I ready for what? And all I see is the shattered glass and broken bits of blue. And the ornament is broken.
To hear Ian's side of things, the rest of the night is pretty ordinary. They get pajamas on, they have a snack, they brush teeth. They just kind of tool around the house. Their parents ask what that sound was, but neither kid fesses up to anything. Everything in the living room looks normal, so they just sort of brush it off. Then it's bedtime. The picture Ian drew, it's cold. I mean, he's not describing a crime of passion here. This is something much darker, to methodically plot out the destruction of your parents' cherished property. That would mean that Ainsley wasn't just a vandal, but a master liar and manipulator. A psychopath, probably. Just what is Ian's deal? By that, I don't mean his plea deal, that he ratted on Ainsley in order to get Skittles. I'll talk more about that in a later episode. What I mean is, what do you make of Ian? Which, of course, is code for, what am I supposed to make of Ian? I talked to some people I felt could give an honest, complete appraisal of Ian's behavior and demeanor. Ian's grandparents.
Well, you know, Ian is my grandson, and I do love him. But he has an intensity about him sometimes that's kind of out there. And sometimes he takes a little bit of a dark turn once in a while. And the time that comes to mind, you know, is that he can be the sweetest guy in the planet. And then all of a sudden, like we said something and he goes, Ainsley was sitting there and he goes, you know, I could hurt her if I wanted to. And I looked at him and I said, what? And he said, I said, you wouldn't really do that, would you? And he goes, no. But made you kind of wonder.
The Ian that convinced parents of Ainsley's guilt, he was wearing a Spider-Man outfit, complete with mask. He's 4, blonde hair and blue eyes, like his sister. Handsome. He's sweet and goofy, the kind of kid who would give kisses until you can't stop laughing, then turn around and say, "For supper, we're just eating stinky butts."
Well, you asked me about Ian. He can be a very sweet child. For example, at the Christmas program that we went to in Sioux Falls, he came in and stood in a spot like he should, and pretty soon here comes Ainsley just kind of wandering over by him. And I was like, what's she doing over there? Are they going to do something? But next thing you know, Ian's taking her hand, bringing her back over to her spot because she didn't know where to stand. It was just the cutest thing. And then as the program went on, pretty soon I see Ainsley walking over there again. I think she kind of wanted to be by her brother. But Ian just took her hand so sweet and just kind of, "Come on, Ainsley, let's go back. Here's your spot." And then he let her stand there and he went back to his. And I'm sure at least 3 or 4 times Ainsley went back over by Ian. And he just so sweetly took her hand and walked back to her spot with her and placed her where she should be standing. And then he went back to his spot and joined in with the singing. It was very, very sweet.
Ian is sharp and mostly courteous. This past year, he's learned letters of the alphabet, not saying them, but writing them. And he's pretty good, too. He loves to color and read and wrestle with his dad. He can't help but be the comedian at all times. During the interviews with his parents, it gets intense, and Ian can't help but try to lighten the mood. I feel bad for the guy. Children lie to parents all the time. This should come as a shocker to no one. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened here, but I'm strongly implying it. You can drive an ominous buoy through some of Ian's plot holes. Like, how exactly did a 1-year-old form such a complete sentence? Or get the strength to destroy a glass ornament? I asked some of Ian's aunts and uncles about his story, and I got some curious answers. Ian has a reputation for lying.
The first thing that popped in my mind was, like, Ian lies. Ian lies about everything.
That's Bryce.
So, for example, he keeps saying he can beat me up, which is totally untrue. I'm almost a full-grown adult. He's probably 4. I mean, I can totally beat him up. I haven't yet. That's not because I can't. It's just because I haven't had time yet.
Bryce's wife, Lindsay, had this to say.
Well, one time Ian told me this story about how he used to be a meerkat, and he had a whole meerkat family. But I'm not sure about it because I'm pretty sure he'd went to the zoo that week, and I think he maybe just saw meerkats.
One incident in particular, the Miles Roush family came out to Cleveland to visit Uncle Bryce, and I came down, and Ian, Uncle Bryce, and I were walking along the beach, and Ian starts telling us a story about his birth, which we were all there. And he was telling us that he was born a girl, actually, and that he slowly turned into a boy that he is now. It also morphed into how he was actually born without ears as well, and it took him, like, a long time to grow his ears, but he eventually got ears. And he was saying that most people were born as girls, and then some changed, and that some people were also born without ears like him.
That's Molly, one of Ian's aunts. Ian's aunt Brenna, who prefers the name Muskrat, stood up for Ian, but ultimately agreed.
I've known Ian and Ainsley since they were born. I mean, I held them both in the delivery room and I cried over them because they were so beautiful. And I've seen both sides of them, both not so nice and the sweetest kids ever.
Brenna can't believe Ian would lie about this, and she also can't believe Ainsley would do it. If you're a muskrat, and there's no scenario here you can rationalize, you're left with fog. This next piece of tape I'm about to play you, it's my favorite piece of tape from all of my reporting so far, because I can relate to it so precisely.
Well then, who the f*** did it? I mean, just, I just don't understand. I mean, I don't really, I just don't see either of them doing this, Ian or Ainsley. I want to know who did this. I want to know, because I don't think it's either of them. Who did it? I don't understand. I have no words. I just don't know. I just don't understand.
Mm-hmm. I talk to Ainsley face to face, I'm struck by how tiny she is. She's 2, blonde hair and blue eyes. She's adorable, and that sparks my most idiotic line of questioning. Could someone who really looks like that break something? Besides hearts. Idiotic, I know.
Did you do it?
No.
She's adamant about it. You can hear it, right? She's staunch. But when I try to get her version of things, everything gets a lot mushier. And that's the problem with Ainsley's story. On one hand, she's still learning to talk, and it's hard to get her thoughts and syllables across to others. On the other hand, how convenient. She can't talk. So no one can fact-check her and poke holes in her stories. Because she has no story. To get a better sense for who Ainsley is, or at least who she was back then, I talked to some of her friends and family. Here's Ainsley's grandpa.
Ainsley is just the sweetest thing. She loves to come and show me her shoes and loves to try on other people's shoes. But she's always very careful. She never breaks any shoes. She also loves to carry her baby around. She takes very good care of her baby. She never breaks her baby. I'm sure she would never break anything. She's just so sweet.
Her grandpa on the other side of the family had something to say, too.
So this summer, Ainsley, she got to show grandpa just how special of a young lady she is. We got to spend a couple of days up here in Big Stone, and we had some yard projects, and grandpa had to spend some time outside. And Ainsley was one of my best helpers. The only thing that she didn't do was carry the big pail. She let grandpa carry the pail. She was the best helper.
From these two interviews, you really get a sense for who Ainsley is. She turned 2 in September, and by December, she was potty trained and wearing underwear. She's grown fascinated with baby dolls and dress up, and her dad puts hair ties, they call them pretties, that match her outfit. I just don't get the feeling that Ainsley is someone who could do something like that. I'd like to think that all my hours of interviews and discussions with her would have amounted to something. For 2 years now, I've been grappling with rumors about Ainsley. People telling me, you don't know Ainsley. There are things you need to know to understand who you're dealing with. These things float like an ominous buoy in the character seas of Ainsley. The rumors themselves are nothing too dastardly. No one is saying, I saw her do it, or I have proof. None of it is directly connected to the crime, but I checked them out as best I could. One of these rumors came from Ainsley's uncle and aunt on her mom's side. We'll call them Bladham and Blairy. Not their real names. Also, these are not their real voices. The reason Bladham and Blairy agreed to go on tape is because they wanted me to know this about Ainsley.
Well, Ainsley has, you know, as many people that know Ainsley know, she has a thing for other people's shoes. And I always think it's the cutest thing because she seems to pick my size 10 shoes. Which are, you know, huge to begin with, but she, you know, puts them on and she somehow walks in them around the house. It's the cutest little thing, and she's so sweet about it. But I love watching her walk around the house in my shoes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and anytime she wants to, she's either going to leave or go to bed, she wants to give everybody a hug and kiss. Just such a sweet little thing that she does. That I've never really seen before in a little girl. But you know, as sweet as that is, I can't help but think, I've seen the dark side. I mean, think about her tromping around in those shoes. Isn't that basically theft when she's taking your shoes from you? Think about it, Carrie.
Yeah, but I think she's just...
she just really likes me. I think she wants to be like me.
It's not all about you. Think about what it says about her character.
I don't agree.
Well, what about when she has one of her fits? She's rolling around on the floor, kicking and screaming.
Our daughter does that too.
This is what Bladham and Blairy, disguised anonymous, had to say. Normally, I probably wouldn't pursue rumors that on their face aren't connected to the crime at hand. But in this case, I decided it was worthwhile because of where these rumors came from. I think these rumors are coming from a feeling that a handful of people have. I've heard this from about 4 people who knew Ainsley growing up, that Ainsley was capable of committing this crime. People said she used her charm and her smarts to weasel out of things when she got caught. Which brings me to the only rumor I heard that at least partly checked out. It was this. Ainsley is a goofball.
Ainsley is a goofball. A silly goofball.
That is Marissa, Ainsley's aunt. And that is her real name and her real voice.
Well, I remember the last time I saw her, it was back at my mom's house, so it'd be her Grandma Carol's house. And I was in the kitchen, and I think she was in the living room, and I heard Holly whisper something to her. And she said, go show Aunt Marissa. So then Ainsley came into the kitchen where I was, and she had no clothes on except she put her pants on her head. So she was wearing her pajama pants on her head and just a diaper. And I'm pretty sure she didn't have a shirt on either. So she was just giggling, was so proud of the fact of how silly she looks. So yeah, she's a silly goofball for sure.
What your opinion is of Ainsley's goofballness depends a lot on what you think of as being silly and harmless. Some people see it as a silly thing kids do from time to time. Others see something more malignant, an indication of Ainsley's duplicitness. The other person in this story is my husband, Miles. It was his ornament, and he was the one who discovered it in the first place. In the past year, he's been busy. Still working full-time doing web development at Security Labs in Sioux Falls, writing stories as much as possible, including another successful attempt at National Novel Writing Month in November, and exercising regularly to stay in shape.
Should we begin?
This is tape from Miles' interview with parents in the case. He's a little hard to hear on the tape. He's soft-spoken.
I think I may have discovered an ornament in the corner of the living room.
I think I may have discovered an ornament in the corner of our living room, he says. The slightly off-kilter story Miles told goes like this. Miles was playing board games in the living room. It was Candyland. He realized he was missing a piece, the spinner was broken, but he had another spinner in the Balderdash game. So he goes into the corner of the living room, quite a ways it seems for a guy who just has to get a new spinner. Later they'd measure. 10 feet into the living room is where he goes. This next part is a little upsetting.
That's when I discovered the ornament in the corner of the room. It was all broken up.
Miles' story is a little weird. He talks about the board games being kept in the corner, but other members of the family contend that the board games were kept on a bookshelf against an opposite wall of the living room. So his story about why he stopped, where he stopped, it just doesn't seem right.
We don't have board games in that corner. It's just the kids' costumes and stuff.
Oh. Right, yeah. No, yeah, that sounds right. Right. Yeah, you're probably right. That sounds right. Now that I'm thinking about it, that sounds right.
This doesn't ever get cleared up, really, and I kind of let it go. But a bunch of things are fishy. Remember Muskrat, the one who asked, well then who the f*** did it? Later in that call, she mentioned something about Balderdash, and so I asked her if I could start taping.
Tell me again what you just told me.
There was never any spinner in Balderdash. There were never any spinners in Balderdash.
We did a lot of research on this. Where it was, whether it was, and we could not account for the spinner. Muskrat says that's because it never was. She said she knows this because she used to play balderdash. A lot. With her family and without her family.
And I used to, you know, I don't know, steal balderdash from Alka all the time. So I was pretty aware what was in the board game.
What I'm trying to get at is, did he really just stumble on this ornament, or was he looking for this ornament because he already knew where it was? That is a reasonable question, and like so many things before it, it's just also bobbing out there like this ominous buoy. Miles declined to answer the question on tape, so I asked his relatives.
Do you think Miles would break a Christmas ornament?
Yes.
You betcha.
I would stake my political future on it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, definitely.
I'd bet my political future on it.
Daddy broke the ornament. Daddy did it.
Did you break the ornament?
There's a wing sale at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Sometimes I think Miles isn't listening to me. I can't help but think how much this all just seemed like a meditation on the nature of truth and justice. My biggest fear with this case has always been that I'm going to get through all this and it's going to be, I don't know, did Ian do it? Did Ainsley do it? Did Miles? We might always, Me? I certainly, But I'm heading to Target. It's almost Christmas, and I have an ornament to buy. Familial was produced by Miles Rausch and me. Ian Rausch and Ainsley Rausch are our children. Research and fact-checking by no one. Familial is a parody of the Serial Podcast, which you can follow at serialpodcast.org. Our score was stolen from Serial Podcast, and we really hope we don't get in trouble for that. Our website, where you can see a bunch of big text and bright colors, is milesrauschfamily.com/ccard/2014. Support for Familial comes from Coffee and Red Wine. Familial is a production of This South Dakotan Life in WMRF Sioux Falls.
Yeah, it's about done, right? I guess I'm ready. Whenever you is. I sure as hope you wasn't recording all that.
You sure were.
So that's your line. Deliver it however you want. Take your time if you need some. Go for it.
Yes.
Let's take... Did someone flush the toilet? What's going on? Yeah. Let's...
Upstairs.
Let's take that from the top. Just happened.
I think that really adds to it.
I thought you wanted us to do the sound effects, too.
I'm sorry. I wasn't clear about that.
He's sweet and goofy. The kind of kid who would give kisses until you can't stop laughing, then turn around and say... I didn't read this first. Oh, crap. Then turn around and say, for supper, we're just eating stinky butts.